Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the DFS pregame show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blendered, Blender HD. If you want to follow me on Twitter, and it's Friday, February 24th. It's Fighting Friday. We're back to fighting. We're fighting. You can see I've been fighting a lot. Okay, this is slowly going away. My black eyes are slowly going away. Hopefully I won't get punched out tomorrow. Hopefully my fighters won't get knocked out tomorrow, because that's what we'll be talking about, the UFC. Apex Vegas, whatever number they're up to, slate. It is a main event of Nikita Krylov versus Ryan Spann. Okay, I guess that's a main event. I guess it is. There's 12 fights now on the slate. There was 13. The Garrett Armfield Jose Johnson fight was canceled yesterday, so now we're down to 12 fights. So it's a little bit smaller. I prefer 13 over 12. I definitely prefer 12 over 11 or 10. So obviously, the less fights that are on the slate, the more you have to care about, like, duplication and combinatorics. And we'll be talking about that. Give me those thumbs ups. Give me the thummy thumbs. You know how much I like hitting the like button. Punch the like button. Punch the like button, the thumbs up button, the subscribe button, the notification bell. Punch everything you want. Punch your ticket. Punch your ticket to a combo premium package on Roto Grinders, where for this MMA slate, you'll get the premium ground and pound podcast with Mike and Liam. They'll break down all the fights. They're the fight people, right? Me, I just see names and numbers, right? I just look at names and numbers. Those people, Mike and Liam, they know the fights. I mean, obviously I watch enough UFC now that I get a little bit of sense of the fighting. But if you want all the breakdowns for that, you want the expert survey, you want the projections, you want the ownership, you want everything, you want lineup HQ, sign up for RotoGrinders Premium. You get all of that. Get the combo premium. You get NBA. You get PGA. You get MLB. Will be back soon, right? You get NFL, XFL, college football, college basketball, whatever's in season. You'll get it all. NHL. We got NHL stuff. So sign up for that. And as always, on the show, normally, right, other than Fridays when there's a UFC slate, I'm answering your DFS strategy questions. Send those in, questions@theoryofdfs.com. If you got any topics you want to talk about, obviously next month we'll be talking a bunch about, towards the end of the month, do our MLB primer, right? So if you got anything, you don't even have to go back to past episodes. You got a question that got covered, a month ago, fine, I'll go over it again, right? It's unstructured learning here. But if you want structured learning, go to theoryofdfs.com, pick up one of my two courses, either the Fundamentals Masterclass or the Advanced Course, which comes with custom Excel tools. And Daniel Hutchings says, punch the like button like the concrete punched my face. Yeah, that's right. I consider myself that I punched the concrete. I headbutted. I face-butted it, right? I don't want my fighters to be face-butted tomorrow. So tomorrow's slate, as usual, anytime you approach a UFC card, it's very important to understand the context of the card and how the context of the card will affect the probability of what the construction of the optimal or nut lineup is more likely. The probability is more likely to happen. Okay. So obviously slate size matters. Okay. So on a 15 fight card versus, let's say, a 9 fight card, a really small one, right? We don't get many of those. So like on a 9-fight card, I mean, your goal is to get the top 6 winners, essentially, right? That could fit within the salary constraints. So on a 9-fight card, what's your priority? Winning the fight, right? Not necessarily having the highest ceiling, but getting 6 winners is way more important in GPPs in a 9-fight card versus a 15-fight card. Now, obviously, in a 15-fight card, you still want to get the winners, right? Right. You still need to, pretty much. Of course, there are slates. We'll get into the second context. There are slates where the highest scoring underdog or some stack or some like weird thing happens where, because of price, a loser is in the optimal lineup. But for the most part, on a 15-fight card, you still want 6 winners, but you want the highest scoring winners, right? On a 9-fight card, well, it's quite possible, you know, like, well, 6 of them, there's going to be 3 winning fighters left out of the optimal lineup. How many points do the winners need to score? Not as much as on a 15-fight card because of opportunity cost, right? There's going to be 50, on a 15-fight card, there are 15 winners, right? So you want the highest scoring winners. And now, like, the guy that's more likely to have a 74-point win isn't as valuable. On a 9-fight card, they're much more valuable. So what's the context of the card? This is like in the middle of that, right? Between 9 and 15, this is a 12-fight card. So yes, obviously we want to win probability. It's still important. It's always important to some extent. But we want the highest ceiling fighters as well. And then context of card is how big of a favorite are the favorites? Okay, so if I go to my MMA odds sheet, which I have preliminarily filled out, with our RG ownership, our projection, some other metrics here. Some the betting lines from yesterday, I haven't updated them yet. They're not going to change all that much. How big of a favorite are the favorites, right? Because we have some cards where half the favorites are like 3-1. 3-1 favorites are better, right? They're very, very lopsided fights. Now, on those slates, it's less likely, obviously, because the favorites are very heavily favored. There aren't going to be many underdogs that win, right? Probability-wise, right? From a probability standpoint. I'm not saying that they can't, but it's less likely. So on a slate where there are a lot of heavy favorites, it's more and more likely that the optimal lineup will come closer to 50K. Well, you're going to spend most of your salary, right? On a card where most of the fights are 2-1 or worse, right? With a favorite, it's only a 2-1 favorite or 2.2-1 favorite. That's much more likely that there's going to be more underdogs that win. Okay. Which means that the optimal lineup may not be 50, maybe less than 50K, less likely. Remember, we're thinking about more likely and less likely, not will or will not happen, right? So on a card where there's a ton of heavy favorites, you could have three underdogs that win. I mean, it's just less likely to happen. And on a card with tons of pick'em fights, you could still have, I mean, we've had a card, I think in November or December, there was a card where it was like 12 or 13 fights, and the biggest favorite was only like minus 230, right? And that was a perfect card for like, oh, okay, you could play like anyone, right? And it turned out on that card, I think out of the 12 fights, 11 favorites won. And the one underdog that won was only like a $7,900 guy or something like that, right? So sometimes you have those slits. A lot of pick 'em fights and the favorites still win, right? So it's just about more likely or less likely. The context of this card is kind of a little bit of a mix. There's basically two fights with heavy favorites. So you have Tatiana Suarez at 9,600 and Joe Selecki at 9,400, right? Win probability based on the VIG win probability. This is not removing the VIG. 88 and 85%. Of course, they're the two most expensive fighters. Right, 9,600, 9,400. Outside of that, like, we only have one, two, three fighters that are a little bit more than a 2-to-1 favorite, right? 69%, 70%, 69%. Then everything else is within, is like 60-40, within around 60-40, 3-to-2, 2-to-3. Okay? Which means, like, especially in this mid-range, feel free to get different. Feel free to get different. So I think outside of like the Suarez and Selecki fights against Deaton and Montana De La Rosa, feel free to, you know, you could leave 600 on the table, especially for large field GPPs for the sake of the lack. You don't want to be duplicated as much. So because Suarez and Selecki are heavy favorites, Selecki's minus 105 inside the distance. Suarez is only plus 125 inside the distance, which is less than some of these other fighters, but also remember that she's like a volume wrestler. Okay, so it's Tatiana Suarez at 9,600 can get to a decision and still score 140 points. So just understand the context of the inside the distance lines. The same thing for like Muniz. Andre Muniz is a grappler, right? Krylov can mix it in, right? Aliyev is a bit of a grappler, right? Selecki is, he's a grappler, I guess. Right. But I mean, he could win on the feet as well. So like Mike Bellot is more of a striker. Trevor Peak is more of a striker. Krylov is a mix, I guess. I mean, he'll mix in takedowns. I don't know against Ryan Spann what he's going to do. So like a lot of lineups are going to have like one of these two, either Suarez or Selecki. Trevor Peak is minus 225 favorite with a minus 150 inside the distance line. He's the best ITD line on the slate. He's a UFC newcomer, but he's 7-0, and he's facing Eric Gonzalez, who's 0-2 and has gotten knocked out and submitted. Okay? So most likely, these lineups are going to look like, what are the chalk lineups going to kind of look like? So you get like Suarez there, Peak, right? You play Suarez and Peak. I think in the mid-range, I think you're going to get a lot of ownership on Jordan Levitt against Martinez. I'm not a big fan of Jordan Levitt, but from a floor perspective, if in a decision, like Levitt could score actually pretty well. So like maybe Jordan Levitt in the mid-range. Depends on whether or not if you're playing a favorite in the main event, like the Krylov Span fight. If you take a look at the ITD lines, minus 130 for Krylov, plus 165 for Span. So in these types of main events, see, this is context. Context is king. I am more likely to fade the main event in these scenarios than in others. And what are the others? Like, you take a look at the inside the distance line. It seems counterintuitive. Of like the higher the I would say the higher the probability. So like the lower the ITD lines for the main event, the less likely I am to play the main event due to ownership reasons. Now, why is that? Okay. The main event is the only fight on the slate that goes five rounds. It's the only fight that goes five rounds. And that's the reason why it's popular. It's a five round fight. You get the opportunity to score points in all of these rounds, right? I'm pointing it out on the fingers to make it easy. All these rounds, you get points, right? Punches and strikes and control time and takedowns. So in a 5-round decision is typically worth a lot more than a 3-round decision, right? Yeah, but that's if the fight goes to decision. So when the ITD lines are high or good for the main event, like what's the likelihood of it going 5 rounds? Like most likely this fight ends within the first 3 rounds anyway, regardless of who wins. Now, that means the winner is more likely to score decent points, just like in any 3-round fight, right? You get a first round finish. It doesn't matter if it was a 5-round fight, a 3-round fight, a 12-round fight. It doesn't matter. First round finish is the first round finish. The other guy scores barely anything. But ownership wise, people treat 5-round fights as, oh, okay, then I got to play Krylov or Spann, right? You take a look at this ownership. And we have it as Krylov 52%, Spann 34%. But let's say I told you, that that wasn't the main event, right? Let's say that was a 3-round fight. Should it be that owned, right? Should it be that owned? Probably not. And the likelihood this fight ends early. So I should pretty much be treating it like it's a 3-round fight, right? Now, obviously, it could go 5 rounds, right? You get the extra points in round 4 and round 5 and then the decision. And it's, hey, even then, they may not score enough points to make the optimal lineup. But I think in these scenarios, people look at these ITD lines and go, oh, look at the ITD line, and I got 5 rounds to work with. Like, well, the 5 rounds don't really matter as much, right? You're not expecting it to go that long. So, like, in these, I'm not saying that I'm completely fading the main event, but I'd be more likely in these scenarios. Then you see ones where the ITD lines are like 300 and 400. And it's like, no, I'm more likely to play this main event because someone winning in the decision could score 100 points because it's going to go 5 rounds. So that's the context of the slate. So we take a look here and you go, if you're going to play Suarez, Peak, Levitt, I could see playing like Spann in this lineup, right? You got 8,000 and you're going to play mid-range people, right? Maybe you play Dontel Mays, something like that, something around here. Suarez, Peak, Levitt, Spann, right? I think Ode Osborne because the line movement, right? Ode Osborne, because Charles Johnson right now is only a minus 160 favorite and he's 9K. So the line value is plus 140 on Ode Osborne. He's 7,200. So I think he's going to be popular. And then you have 8,800 left, and then you can play like Aliyev or something like that, right? I think in cash games, it'll be like a stack. It'll be something like this. Will be the cash game lineup. Suarez, Peak, Levitt, Spann, Osborne, Krylov, or something like that. So I think this is going to be like popular construction. Suarez, Peak, Levitt, Spann, Osborne, Aliyev. And if you don't play Spann and you play like Krylov instead of Spann, you have 7,500. And now you're playing Rafael Alves, I guess, or, you know, someone down. Brendan Allen, maybe, against Muniz. And if you're playing like Muniz instead, so let's say you're playing, instead of Peak, you're playing Muniz, like Muniz, Suarez, Levitt, Osborne. You can play Spann in this lineup. And then you got 8,600. And then you go, you know, I don't know, Haley Cowan, probably not much ceiling there. Let's say you don't play Spann in this lineup. You play Krylov in this lineup. You got 7,400. So now you're going down to a Rafael, same, Alves, Allen, something in that range. I think Dontel May. If you don't play Levitt, you'll play Dontel Mays instead. But I think these are what these lineups are going to look like. And instead of like Suarez, you'll see Selecki in there. Or maybe you'll see Suarez and, if you play Suarez and Selecki, right? Now you can play like Brendan Allen against Muniz, right? So I think this will be popular. Suarez, Selecki, Levitt, Krylov, Osborne, Allen, right? And then we take out Krylov. If you put Spann in there, the 8,300 would be like Augusto Sakai or someone in the mid-range. Like these are the lineups that you're probably avoiding in large field GPPs. Yeah, if you're playing cash games in small field, you've got a 2v2 off of these types of lineups. But I think that the popular build is going to be one 9K fighter. Like, it's either going to be one 9K fighter and Trevor Peak, or two 9K fighters without Trevor Peak. So it'll be Suarez Selecki, Suarez Muniz, Selecki Muniz, or Suarez Peak, Selecki Peak, Muniz Peak. Then on the mid range, I think obviously you got Krylov in there at 8,700, but I think you're going to most likely play these like slight underdogs, like Levin and Mays. I think they're going to be the most popular. Yeah, you'll get still some ownership on Sakai and Victor Martinez. I think these are the fights that are going to be, they're not the most appealing fights, but they fit in your lineups. Then on the underdog side, Ryan Spann in the main event, he'll be the most popular underdog. Then after him, it'll be Ode Osborne because of line value. Then after that, then it kind of drops. Then you probably get Brendan Allen against Muniz, maybe. Maybe Johan Lennes against Malat. So I think the guy that's going to be left out in the top range, the one that's going to be left out the most is going to be Charles Johnson. Okay, because there's a line value. He shouldn't be 9K. If you reprice this now, he should be like 8,600. So it's like he's like $400 too expensive. That doesn't mean he can't win, and it doesn't mean he can't win with 100 points. Ode Osborne, you know, Charles Johnson could grapple him and submit Osborne on the ground. No problem. I think Charles Johnson's a bit overrated, but I think Ode Osborne's a bit overrated. Osborne's more likely to win via knockout. You see that? I don't think he has much of a ground game. But I think Charles Johnson will be left out up top, but for a little bit more rightful reason. But Mike Malott, I think, is going to be at 9,200. We have him at 28% owned. I think he'll be under, way under that. I have him at 26. I think it could be even lower than that. His upside is lower than some of these other fighters because he's likely not going to grapple. But Johan Lennes is not like a defense. I mean, Johan Lennes is a defensive. His striking defense, I don't know, right? This doesn't seem that Mike Malott versus a Johan Lennes doesn't seem like the type of fight that is going to go three rounds, right? We see the inside the distance lines. Minus 115 for Malott, plus 300 for Lennes, right? I think someone gets knocked out. It just depends when. But of course, second round, early second round knockout, early third round knockout. Yeah, I mean, a second round knockout. I mean, Malott scores 88 points. Does that do enough for you at 9,200? Probably not. But that's the reason why he's going to be lower owned. So I think the price leverage, salary based leverage at the top is Malott. And I guess Charles Johnson also. But I mean, understand that he's plus 205 inside the distance and his poor line value. So you're playing Charles Johnson primarily for ownership. Then from a leverage perspective, I think Andre Muniz, see the thing is that I think this Muniz-Allen fight is going to be over-owned.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, I think I think the line is a little too wide. I mean, I think Andre Muniz is a good grappler, but Brendan Allen is not bad on the ground at all. I mean, he's a wrestler. You can't trust Brendan Allen, right? You can't trust his chin, but I don't think Andre Muniz is going to knock him out. So I think this is more likely a grapple battle, which is good for DFS points, but if it's close, it's quite possible that Muniz wins the first round and Allen wins the second round, and the third round goes 50-50. It's a decision. And like in the round where Allen has Muniz down, like Muniz ain't scoring points. So it's quite possible that the winner of this fight without a submission in at least the first two rounds just duds. And I'd much rather have Allen in a win with 70 points or something than Muniz. But I think Allen's going to be owned also. So it's not like you're getting that much leverage by, oh, Muniz is going to be 32% owned. I'm going to play Brendan Allen. Well, he's going to be like 24% owned. So I think I'm more likely to just not play that fight, and I'll probably be under on that fight. And then I don't think I'm going to be playing Montel and De La Rosa against Tatiana Suarez. I don't think I'm going to be playing Carl Deaton. I'm playing about 8 lineups tomorrow. I don't think I'm playing Deaton against Alecki, right? Yeah, I don't think so. I think I'm more likely to not, like, obviously Ode Osborne's going to be popular as an underdog because of the line value. I think he's going to be like 30 to 35%, maybe even more, 36, 38%. But do I want to play Charles Johnson at bad line value and a poor ITD line for his price against him? Maybe not. You can. Like I said, Charles Johnson is purely playing for ownership reasons. But I think I'm just more likely to just not. I think maybe I'll have Ode Osborne in my Mike Mellott type of lineups, my non-Trevor Peak type of lineups. Out of 8 of them, maybe I have 2 Ode lineups. I'm more likely to just go under on that fight. Then we already talked about the main event, right? I think I'm much more likely to have Ryan Spann than Nikita Krylov, only because, like, if I'm not going to play Ode Osborne and I'm not going to play Brendan Allen as much, I'm not going to play Yoan Linnes as much, right? If I'm not going to play Deaton or De La Rosa, like, who am I playing? Right? Who am I? I mean, like, I need some salary relief somewhere. I'm not a big fan of playing Rafael Alves. I mean, that's kind of like a knockout of bust type of guy. I'd much rather play Nurullah Aliyev against him. I mean, who am I playing down here? Well, the one guy that stands out is Eric Gonzalez against what could be a 45%+ owned newcomer, UFC newcomer, Trevor Peak. That fight, I mean, Eric Gonzalez is plus 265 inside the distance. This fight is like minus 550 overall to end, to get finished. Eric Gonzalez at least has 2 UFC fights. He's not good. At least he has 2 UFC fights. Trevor Peak, only 7 professional fights. Yeah, he's undefeated. Never fought in the UFC, though. Most likely, Trevor Peak murks him. Yeah, of course, yes. But he's only minus 225 favorite. It's not like he's that huge of a... He's a 2-to-1. A little over a 2-to-1 favorite. If Trevor Peak's going to be like 40%+ owned and Eric Gonzalez is going to be like 10 to 16, you know, something around that range, I'll take a shot on him. Yeah, that to me, that's where the leverage is. So, like, if you take a look at, like, a type of lineup that I'm going to be looking to build would be something more like Eric Gonzalez, Ryan Spann, right? Now I could spend, and maybe I don't spend on Suarez. Maybe I play Mellott against Linnes. I play Selecki instead, right, up here. And now I got mid-range guys. If everyone's going to play Levitt, maybe I play Victor Martinez. You do Victor Martinez for leverage, and you get 8,400 left. Right? Gabriela Fernandez or something, you know, some type of lineup that looks like this. Gonzalez, Spann, Mellott, Zalecki, Martinez, Fernandez. And even in these lineups, you probably could play like Jordan Levin in this lineup. And you got 8,600. And then, you could play Haley Cohen. I'm not a big fan of that. Or you play Dontel Mays instead. Like, maybe you play Mays. You got 8,700. Maybe instead of playing Spann, you play Krylov. You got 7,500. And, yeah, you're down in bad. I don't necessarily want to play Alves. And I think Osborne, Allen, and Linnes are going to be overpopular. And obviously I'm playing their opponents, so I'm not going to play them both in the same lineup. But these are the types of lineups that I'm looking for. When I'm fading Tatiana Suarez, I'm not saying that she loses. I'm just saying maybe. Dude, maybe she only has needs 2 takedowns and submits Montana De La Rosa and has 104 points. She wins easily 3 minutes into the fight. Not many ground strikes, ends up with some submission and 100, 105 points for 9,600. That may not be enough. I mean, it's fine. Player in cash games. It's perfectly fine. But maybe Mellott goes out there and quick win bonus knocks out Yoan Linnes. That could happen. Joe Selecki could end up a third round submission win with eight takedowns and 8 minutes of ground control. And Selecki has 128 points. Right? Trevor Peak. Like, Trevor Peak's not a wrestler. So, like, this, people are going to be overvaluing Trevor Peak. It's just like, you got 5 minutes. You got 5 minutes, guy. Right? Is he going to knock him out in the first round or not? Because if he doesn't, he's 8,900. So it's not like he needs 120 points. But, you know, he's a UFC newcomer. Are you going to play a 40% owned UFC newcomer that's KO reliant? I'm more likely to go on the other side. Now, it doesn't mean I won't have Peak. I think out of eight lineups, maybe I will have two, maybe three Peak lineups. His ceiling is tremendous. I mean, he could also, even if he doesn't knock him out, he could, in the first round, I mean, he could score 1 million points, just strikes, you know, gets it, knocks him down, gets on top of him. 80 strikes, two knockdowns, you know, controlled, who knows? Who knows? It could be a slaughter. Hey, maybe it goes three rounds and it's still a slaughter. Maybe it's one of those fights where you're wondering why the referee hasn't stopped it yet. Right? Where the other guy is just like, okay, yeah, he's still defending intelligently, but he's still getting his ass kicked. And then next thing you know, he has 180 significant strikes, two knockdowns, and whatever. And it's he wins 30-25 on the scorecards and still scores like 137 points. That could happen. Of course, I didn't mention like the women's fights other than the Suarez fight. I don't know how high scoring these female fights are going to be. The Cohen Perez fight and the Fernandez Jesuda vicious fight. I don't know. I mean, they're close. I mean, they're in the mid range. So, like, I mean, you could play them for sure. I mean, I think I prefer the Sakai Mays fight, although that's a heavyweight fight. That could be sloppy and slow. But the Victor Martinez, I mean, you just take a look at the inside the distance line. Sakai 200, Mays 195. Martinez Levitt fight is 185, 175. And then you take a look at the female fights. It's like Cohen is plus 295. Perez is plus 380. Fernandez is plus 335. And Jesuda Vicious is plus 570. So like that Fernandez-Jesuda Vicious fight is the most likely to go to decision. But they're at a price point where, hey, if they give me an 80-point win, maybe that ends up being optimal. But that typically only ends up being optimal if like most of the favorites win. Where you have to use some middle range fighter in order to get the points, everything. We see an Ode Osborne knockout and a Johan Lennes knockout and Ryan Spann wins as an underdog in the main event. It's like, dude, like 80 points out of any of these female fighters ain't gonna cut it, right? It ain't gonna cut it. Yeah, Tatiana Suarez only putting up 105. Ain't gonna cut it either. So understand how the range of outcomes for a slate, what types of outcomes there could be. And how does that affect the construction of the nut lineup? And your goal is to build lineups that fit those nut lineup constructions. And sometimes you could be like, well, I think this type of construction is going to be over-owned, so I'm going to play a bunch that aren't that. And then some people diversify. Be like, well, I'll play some like this, some like this, some like that. Like if you were playing 150 lineups, do you leave 1,500 on the table in all of your lineups? Like, I mean, you can, but I'm much more likely to say, okay, I'm going to take some of these types of nut lineup constructions. I'm going to take some of these. So I have nice coverage across the board in a lot of lineups. So if you're playing 20 lineups, doesn't mean you can't play like a chalkier construction combinatorically. I mean, but just get a little bit different. Like if you want to play, let's just say Suarez, Peak, Levitt, Spann, Osborne, who's left here? 8,800, Aliyev. Like something like this. I think this is going to be one of the most popular lineups, if not the most popular lineup. It's like, well, you don't want to play this and be duped 100 times or more. So it's like, how do I get different? Well, instead of playing Aliyev, maybe play Haley Cohen instead, right? And then on top of that, instead of playing Ryan Spann, you play both of the female fighters. You could do that. Or instead of playing Osborne, you play Gonzalez. And then instead of playing Peak, You could still play. Let's see, 9,000. You could still play Aliyev in this line. Like, you could do something like this. Yeah, you still have Suarez. You still have Levitt, and you still have Span. But you got Eric Gonzalez leverage over Trevor Peak. Haley Cohen, probably the lowest owned fighter out of the favorites, I think. Nurullo Aliyev, he's owned, but not like absurdly or anything like that. You don't have Trevor Peak in your line. I mean, you have the leverage off of that. You can play something like this. Suarez, what is it? Suarez, Aliyev, Cohen, Levitt, Span, Gonzalez. I mean, that it's a 49-8 lineup. That's fine. So it doesn't mean you have to like, oh, I can't play. If I play Suarez, I can't play Span, or I can't play Levitt. I mean, you can play some of these lines. I mean, this is not as contrarian as the ones that I showed before, but you can still mix these in. I mean, the chalk is the chalk for a reason. It is for a reason. If you got any questions, throw them in the YouTube chat. If you got any questions about DFS strategy, right? We do that Monday through Thursday, right? And then Fridays are fighting. Fridays, we're fighting because there's a UFC card. Send them in. Questions at theoryofdfs.com. We're going to be talking a bunch about combinatorics in the coming weeks. I got a couple of questions lined up for that. But you got anything MLB-wise, especially? Because I think the second half of March, we'll be doing an MLB primer. So if you send those questions in. But if you got any other questions about playing DFS in general, sports betting even, sports betting, prop betting, anything, advantage play, anything you want when it comes to, you know, playing a strategic game like this for positive expected value, send it in, questions@theoryofdfs.com. And if you want more about this UFC slate, as I said in the beginning, got to subscribe to RotoGrinders Premium. And you'll get the Ground and Pound podcast. That's probably, what, 90 minutes? I'll be listening to that later today with Mike and Liam. They'll break down the fights for you. Got the expert survey coming out later today. And you'll get access to build all your lineups in Lineup HQ with the updated projections and ownership. And you can fool around all you want with lineup construction in this tool. Later today, we got basketball still going on. NBA still trucking along. Got Grinders Live later today. Got Crunch Time. We got, what else? We got PGA's going on, right? Some really bad event where, like, what? M is the highest priced golfer or something? It's not that. I know the Honda Classic. Yeah, that's not a great event. So we got that. We got tons of stuff going on the YouTube channel, on the Scores and Odds channel as well. Go over to that YouTube channel for all your betting needs. Our sister site, scoresandodds.com. Subscribe to that YouTube channel and give me that like. You know how much I like the thumbs, right? Especially my thumb. My thumb hurts a little bit. So you make it better by hitting the thumb button, the like button, and the subscribe button if you're new here, and the notification bell to know when we go live, when I go live, right? Because I'm here, right? We took a little bit of a break for the All-Star break. I was on vacation a bit. And now we're back on a normal schedule for the foreseeable future till May probably. I'm going away in May, so until then we're good, and yeah, right. I'll be here for you. I'm here for you all the time, answering your DFS strategy questions Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock Eastern, on the DFS pregame show on RotoGrinders.com.